This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Shug McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. This is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you once again from my home studio as my producer Lee Della Pina is pushing all the buttons back in our main studio in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. As always, you are listening to this show live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM Channel 201, or you're tuned in to our free live streaming or the archived podcast of the program, and you're doing that on our HRN website, horseracingradio.net. Really happy to have you along for the next hour as I welcome a guest who, well, he joins us from north of the border. He grew up in the Maple City of Ontario, Canada, but his family roots can be traced all the way back to the beautiful southern European island known as the Republic of Malta. He's certainly no surprise, and it is no surprise, that he would choose to make a living in the sport of thoroughbred racing, considering that his father and three uncles all became successful trainers, with his uncles Sid and Larry now enshrined in the Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame. Sid as a trainer and Larry as a jockey after riding more than 2,300 winners before turning his attention to training upon his retirement. With all of that racing success in his family tree, you probably wouldn't be shocked to hear that our guest on today's show was among three trainers recognized as a Sovereign Award finalist for Canada's Top Trainer of 2019. And although the 44-year-old conditioner may not have been able to dethrone 12-time Sovereign Award winner Mark Cassie, he received a pretty good consolation prize when one of his trainees, whom he claimed for $16,000 at Gulfstream Park in 2017, was crowned Canada's Horse of the Year and Champion Female Turf Horse, thanks to these outstanding performances in 2019.
And they are well out in front here. Starship Jubilee and Luis Contreras has really toyed with them, and this time is going to win the Canadian Stakes with even more of an impressive display. And a big winner, Starship Jubilee, by four or five lengths.
It's now the favorite, Starship Jubilee, to take charge and move away by three. Back to second is Picara, down the center, Bitacora, Shanghai Starlet, and Mrs. Ramona G. They're all left in the classy wake of Starship Jubilee. 13 posts, no problem. She wins by four.
Starship Jubilee out by two lengths. Imperial Charm in second. Platan is running on well. Durant on the outside. It is Starship Jubilee inside the final furlong. Starship Jubilee a length and a half. Durant and Platan trying desperately, but Starship Jubilee is the winner.
Three stakes victories capped by the Grade 1 E.P. Taylor for Starship Jubilee, Canada's Horse of the Year of 2019. And please join me in welcoming her trainer, Kevin Attar, to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here this afternoon. Kevin, first of all, congratulations, my friend.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It was a great honor.
Yeah, you hear those race calls here on the radio, and you think back on everything she accomplished in 2019. Tell me the first couple of thoughts that came to your mind as you were listening to those calls.
Yeah, I kind of get a little goosebumps actually just listening to her, the race calls, and obviously the captivated by the E.P. Taylor. It was, you know what I mean, a grade one, my first grade one win as a trainer. So brings back great memories, and she's just been a wonderful horse to be a part of.
Why is she so special? What makes her so good?
Yeah, I just think she's so honest. You know, she tries each and every time. You know what I mean? Doesn't come up with excuses. She's so tactical. You know what I mean? Could be on the lead, comes off the pace. You know what I mean? She just has that will to win, the desire, and you know what I mean? Just to see her, and obviously, I mean, she's a seven-year-old now, and she's 3-for-3 in 2020. And it just she seems to be getting better and better as time goes.
Well, I was going to ask you that question. Is it possible that she is even better this year than she was last year?
Arguably, you have to say she's kind of at the peak of her game right now. All three wins in South Florida this winter have been, big wins. Like her first win, obviously, in restricted company. She barely came out of a gallop, it seemed, and then in the Suwannee River, it was a little bit tougher, but she still kind of drew away from the field. And then in Tampa, in the Hillsborough, they made her work. She kind of looked a little bit uncomfortable early in the race, but she tipped out, they came at her from the outside, and she still was able to prevail.
What'd you see in her that led you to claim her in 2017 for just that $16,000 tag?
Claiming at Gulfstream is tough. You go in for so many horses, we were just looking for a horse that we could bring back to Woodbine and maybe win a race or two with and have a little fun with. Obviously, never anticipating anything that's happened now. But we got out shook for a lot of horses prior to her, and when she came along, I liked her form. She had predominantly been sprinting, and she had just kind of started running, beyond five furlongs, and she just kept seeming like she wanted a little bit more ground when I watched the replays, and I just thought, you know what, this horse may be stretching her out a bit. She might really kind of appreciate that, and you might see a little bit better of a horse. So, we dropped our hat in the bucket, and we won a three-way shake for her that day, and the rest has been history.
If you hadn't gotten out shook for the horses that you tried to claim before her, do you think you would have gotten her?
Tough to say. probably not. We might have got one, and it might have been a bad one, and we would have been kind of scared to go back in again, or just kind of met our quota. What may the case be? But I'm sure as heck happy that we got a chip on the other ones. That's for sure, because we didn't want to tempt fate.
Was there a moment, Kevin, after you claimed her and you started to train her and be around her more, that you started to get a sense that she could be this good and this caliber?
So we kind of run her right off the claim not long after, and she won, and then we ran her back. And I remember the one time I actually had come up to Woodbine because it was kind of our stable was split between Woodbine and Florida, so I just flew up to Woodbine for a bit and left my assistant down with her in Florida, and she breezed one morning, and they said she breezed in 47, and I was like, I was furious, and I was saying, geez, and they said, Kev, like, he was holding her and doing all he could to slow her down, and so anyways, it was what it kind of was, and sure enough, she comes back again, and she wins again, and they just, she rattled off those three races in a row for us before she kind of heading north, so I think at that point she started obviously looking like more of a horse than we really kind of anticipated or had hoped for. But still at that point, you're still not expecting her to be a stakes caliber horse or a graded stake winner.
So the Sovereign Awards were supposed to be held in April, but because of the situation with COVID-19, they were postponed. And the Jockey Club of Canada, I thought, did a phenomenal job last night putting together a virtual Sovereign Award presentation, which was available online. As you're watching the presentation and you see her name as one of the finalists for Champion Female Turf Horse, which I think she was probably the favorite in that category, but Horse of the Year, as you're watching that Horse of the Year announcement, tell me about that moment. Where were you? What was going through your mind there?
Yeah, so I'm in my living room, kind of with my family, and we're obviously watching. And at that point, so I'm kind of on the tip of my like rocking chair that I kind of got there, and on the side, my wife's got me almost like isolated from the family because of COVID-19 and me coming to the track. So she's a little strict with some rules at the house. So she's got my own little corner set up. So I'm on the edge of my seat at that moment, waiting to hear who the winner is going to be. And obviously, you're going up against a horse of Pink Lloyd, that's, six for six, already a horse of the year. So, you know, it's going to be a close call, and it's not a shoo-in. I mean, obviously I was a little biased, and I thought, you know, she deserved to win, her being a grade one winner and being, you know, she traveled to Saratoga, ran a good race in the Boston Spa. So as soon as they kind of announced, just prior to them announcing the name, they just flash up, you can see the horse's a picture of the horse, because the filly come up, and I could tell it was her, and my son, he was 16, Joshua, him and I just exploded, and we were like, yeah, and just embraced. And to be honest with you, I think that's the first time I've hugged him since arriving from Florida and being quarantined in my own house for the 2 weeks mandatory isolation we have here in Canada when arriving from the U.S. or out of province. So it was just a thrilling moment. And then my wife kind of goes to us afterwards, how did you guys know it was her name going to be called, right? But it was just an unbelievable feeling. And I mean, the only thing that would have topped it off, honestly, was if I was able to kind of obviously share that moment with the owners, because they've been really good to me, showed a lot of confidence by allowing me to kind of continue to train the filly. You know, they could have given her to anybody, obviously, in North America, but they chose to kind of keep her with me, and I appreciate that. And it's been a great, great ride.
Yeah, the owner's Blue Heaven Farm. Tell me a little bit more about them.
Yeah, so, you know, we had put the filly in the November sale, and my partner, myself, you know, we kind of decided to sell her, and we put a reserve bid on her, and she failed to, attain that. So, I mean, she obviously, she'd buy Indy Wind, and, I mean, her first dam was just kind of, she's got a grade one winning second dam. Anyways, long story short, she didn't make the reserve. So now we're prepared to kind of bring her back to Canada and obviously race her another year. And the next morning, I see a text message from the consigner, and he says that he has somebody interested in maybe buying the mare. So sure enough, we made contact, and a deal was reached, and Blue Heaven Farm, Bonnie and Adam purchased the mare, and they asked me a few questions about her, and I told them my honest opinion, and then they decided to continue to race her, and it's obviously paid big dividends for them.
Now, it's a great story. The whole story surrounding Starship Jubilee is so positive. It's what our sport is all about. By the way, visiting with trainer Kevin Attard here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kevin, for our American listeners, they may not realize that when you are up for a Sovereign Award, you do not know if you've won when you show up to the event that night. It's unlike we see with the Eclipse Awards, where they notify you beforehand that you are a winner, and they announce the winners and have a ceremony for many of the categories, at least the media categories anyway. So when you're there and you are nominated as one of Canada's leading trainers, one of three nominees for a Sovereign Award last night, you're up against the likes of Mark Cassie and Norm McKnight. Salty group, but you don't know you're going to win. So you had the jubilation of winning Horse of the Year, and I guess the disappointment of not being named a Sovereign Award trainer. But, I mean, come on. It's almost not fair to have to go up against a guy who is now in the Racing Hall of Fame in two different countries, right?
It's definitely a tall task. But I'm not giving up. I'm still planning on dethroning him at some point, I'm hoping. So it just kind of makes me strive to do better and get stronger. And, you know what I mean? I've obviously got nothing against Mark Cassie, but I do want a Sovereign Award. It's one of my been one of my long kind of career goals. And, he's the reigning king. And I'm planning on dethroning him hopefully one day soon.
Yeah, Mark picking up a record. He's already had the record, but adding to his record now, 12 Sovereign Awards as Canada's leading trainer. He's as good as they get. Your relationship with Mark, Kevin, what is that like?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've spoken to Mark on a few occasions. Obviously, we don't get to see much of him here at Woodbine anymore, but I've never had any issues with him. Claimed horses off him. I've been successful, and obviously, he's a He's a big figure in racing, and I have a lot of respect for what he's done and accomplished. And I mean, I can only hope to do half of what he's done, and I'd be happy with the career I have.
So when you walk around Woodbine, not running into an Attard is probably like walking around Gulfstream and Tampa Bay Downs and not running into a Mirage. Is that right?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Definitely, yes. I mean, there's quite a few of us here. You know, we're obviously a horse family that's kind of been, you know, they migrated from Malta, as you said in the beginning of the show. My father and my uncles, and they kind of found their way to Woodbine. And, a lot of second-generation first-born Canadians, actually, you know, kind of obviously came to Woodbine as well. We grew up here. It's been our kind of home away from home. And, it's a great place. Obviously, Woodbine's home for me. I love this place. I can't say anything, bad about this place. It's just a great facility to train. They look after their people. Couldn't imagine being anywhere else.
Well, I did mention Malta, and I thought that was very interesting that your family came from there. Have you had the opportunity to get back there much?
Yeah, I haven't been there in a long time. It was probably, I would say, maybe 25 years ago. The last time I was there, I was just a young boy. I've got two kids, and my wife, obviously, they kind of would appreciate going there one time. So hopefully when the world gets back to being a little bit normal, maybe we'll be able to kind of go there, and I can show them kind of where it all began.
Is there horse racing in Malta?
They do. More of a pleasure kind of thing that they do there, but they do have a racetrack, and it's nothing, obviously, like it is here, but they definitely really get into it. They don't race for a lot of prize money. It's more of prestige and pride. There's obviously, I think there's a lot of skilled horse people that come from there.
Yeah, your Uncle Joe was the first of your family, from what I understand, to come from Malta to Canada back in the 1950s, he and his wife Connie, and he was later followed by his brothers, Larry, Tino, who was your father, and Sid. Is that the way it all came together?
Correct, yeah. So Joe was the first one. He migrated to Canada, and then he kind of called, and me and a couple of the brothers followed suit. My dad and Sid. And then they end up kind of bringing Larry, and they brought him up, and he kind of made him into a jockey. And two of them are in the Hall of Fame here in Canada now. And Larry's obviously a Sovereign Award-winning jock, and all of them have kind of carved out great careers as horse people, and. They've left a legacy for us, their children to kind of follow suit, and we're trying our best. They taught us a good work ethic, and taught us everything we know about horses, and I couldn't be prouder to be a part of this family.
Were your uncles or your dad involved in racing in Malta before they came to Canada, or did that kind of hit them when they came to Canada?
That hit them when they came to Canada, actually. Now, their father dealt with horses, but work horses. They used to use horses to kind of pull the, groceries, carts around and things like that, deliver things by horse and buggy. They dealt with working horses, and I guess, they obviously had to keep them sound and in good working condition. And so I think they learned, the basics about the horse in general from Malta, and then they eventually, kind of found their way to Woodbine, and they all got jobs here as, grooms and learned from the bottom up, right? So they did it the hard way, and they earned every ounce of respect and achievements that they have.
talking with trainer Kevin Attard here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. As you can hear, he comes from a strong racing family. It was in his blood since the day he was born, pretty much, and he is now the trainer of a Horse of the Year, a Canadian Horse of the Year, in Starship Jubilee, who was crowned with that honor at last night's Sovereign Award ceremony. Kevin, when you describe your Uncle Joe, who is now passed away, and your uncles Larry and Sid and your dad Tino, and you start talking about the way that they approach the game, are there some differences with the way that each of them approached it, or are they all pretty much in a similar boat philosophically?
I think they're all, to be honest with you, in a similar boat. You know, when they were young and they first started at the racetrack, they all worked together. They were all hard workers. Joe's son kind of grew up with them. He's the oldest kind of first-generation Canadian-born Attards, right? He's got Joe's oldest son, only son. He kind of grew up under their care. They like I said, they worked together. They did it the hard way. They worked as a team, and they all learned from each other and then branched off on their own. And they each held respectively good careers.
What did each of them say when Starship Jubilee won Horse of the Year last night? Did they reach out to you immediately?
Yeah, definitely. I got some congratulation calls, and the ones that couldn't get a hold of me, obviously, last night, they seen me this morning, and everybody kind of gives your well wishes. So, it's obviously a proud moment, and I appreciate that they, obviously take the time congratulate me on that success.
So Joe, Sid, and Tino, your dad, all became trainers. Larry eventually became a trainer after he wrapped up a Hall of Fame riding career. How did he get into riding races? Where did that come from?
So I guess from the way the story kind of goes, he kind of came to Canada and he really hadn't ridden a horse before. And my dad was always the one that was a little bit more of the kind of loose cannon, I guess, of the group of them. And he basically kind of got him a helmet and legged him up on a horse and kind of slapped. Basically, it's almost like a movie. Kind of slapped the horse on the butt and said, "Hang on and get him around there," kind of thing, right? So he had no choice but to learn quickly, He had a great career as a jockey, won the Queen's Plate, obviously, in Canada's kind of, Kentucky Derby version, right, of the U.S., and he obviously went into the Hall of Fame, Sovereign Award winning jock, so he was a great rider in his time, and when the time came, he's now trying his hat to as a trainer, and he just keeps one or two horses of his own nowadays, and kind of just has a little fun with that.
How great is it for you to have people like that in your family that you can go to, and if you run into any situation, whether it's just looking for advice on a specific horse or to do something with a specific horse that maybe you haven't seen before, you can go to them and rely on all that experience that they brought to the table. How neat is that, Kevin?
It's definitely nice to have, no doubt about it. They've got some good stories that you can kind of when they're all together, you can kind of hear them share stories of the past and things that they did, and it's really interesting, and you never get bored of it. You might hear the story over and over, but it kind of never gets boring, but it's nice to have that kind of safety net almost where you can approach somebody and ask or pick their brain and definitely they're all there to help you out at any time.
All right, let's go back to the beginning with you. Where did this love of horses and this journey start for you? I guess it was with your dad on the farm?
So I was raised, my dad had a farm in just kind of north of Woodbine, about half an hour, and just a small little 10-acre farm, and I was born and raised there, weekends for me were spent at the racetrack instead of the hockey rink. I just really kind of grew a love for the horse. And I loved kind of coming in the mornings and watching horses as a young boy. And at that time, I thought, you know what I mean, my dream was to be a jockey. But I kind of ate my way out of that job pretty quickly, I guess. And when I realized that dream was over, training was the next thing I wanted to do. So my mom and dad both kind of strived that I get an education first, just in case to kind of back up on. Obviously, you know what I mean, when you're a kid, they kind of, I mean, everybody tells you that racing is hard and you know what I mean, to stay in school and get an education just in case. And, you know what I mean, you only see one side of it and you don't really realize how difficult it is. You just kind of, you know what I mean, you see the wins and you see the glory and it just seems kind of, it's like a bed of roses, really. And then you get older and then you realize everything your parents were telling you wasn't a line, or they weren't trying to steer you in the wrong direction. They were giving you good advice. So I'm in the same boat now. You know, I mean, my son sees one side of the game and he loves it. And, you know, it's not easy. There's a lot of ups and downs, maybe more downs than ups. And it wears on you. And, you know, I mean, it's a tough game. And, you know, I mean, as much as we love it, we dedicate our lives to it and spend a lot of time here. And, you know, so, I mean, I appreciate everything my parents obviously did for me. They instilled a good work ethic in me. We worked hard on the farm. My mom, she didn't know anything about horses before she married my dad. And after they got married and obviously had myself and my sister, she would end up mucking stalls at the farm. And I learned to work with horses. And I mean, it became a family affair, really, my sister as well. And, you know, now, you know, I mean, obviously, racing's been good to me, and I appreciate everything that they've done for me to kind of get me to this point.
Yeah, you have a degree in accounting, and you almost had to fall back on that degree at one point when things got really tough early in your career. We're going to talk about that in the second half of the program, but before we do that, I want to go back to when you were growing up on the farm. I found a cool quote from your dad as I was getting ready for the show, talking about you being 9 years old, and he said you used to walk a really tough horse by the name of Fozzie Bear, and he kind of knew at that point that you had this ability to be around some tough horses and be around horses and handle it. Tell me about that story.
Yeah, you know, as a kid, I was never intimidated by them, and I think, you know, I mean, even to now, you know, I think horses are very intelligent animals, and they sense fear and they sense intimidation. And, you know, it seems like, you know what I mean, I've had a knack with them. I can almost, you know what I mean, sometimes it seems like you can understand them. You know what I mean, they panic and you need to almost kind of just reassure them that everything's okay and you can't panic, right? So I've always had that kind of confidence with them, I guess. And I think it's helped me kind of maybe communicate better with them and be able to kind of handle maybe a Ruly horse a little easier than maybe somebody else.
Yeah, now he's proven he can handle a Canadian Horse of the Year, too. He is trainer Kevin Attard, my special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Kevin, stay with me. We're going to get to a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll look back on some more of the early days. We'll talk about some of the struggles, and we'll talk about plenty of the high moments, too. There have been plenty of those. We'll do that when we come back. It is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, Fasic's family, basically. Some of the guys that work here I've known for 30 years. I just felt really supported, and they're great communicators. They try to help in whatever you do.
Fasic Tipton's has a sale for every market, every segment in the industry. There's multiple opportunities where you're gonna have plenty of good buying and selling situations.
Great customer service. I'm not only a buyer with them, but I'm a seller, and I've always been well taken care of.
There's a lot of different things that sometimes you need at a sale, and Fasic Tipton is there every step of the way.
They show year after year that they're ethical and they're fair and they enjoy what they do. But when you're around people that have a combination of all those things, you know, you can't lose.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the FIPS in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they're inside the quarter pole. They ran a half in a brilliant 44-2. And it's Bear No Joke at the head of the stretch. On the outside, trying to close is really sharp. Between horses, Calgary Cat is fresh and coming on. Here comes Calgary Cat for you, Rico. Rosa da Silva to take the lead and storm home to win the bold venture. It's Calgary Cat by three. Bear No Joke was second. A show photo between Black Hornet and Alpha Better.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, visiting with trainer Kevin Attard. And that call from the legendary Dan Loisel, longtime voice of Woodbine, of Calgary Cat winning the Bold Venture Stakes back in 2014, one of several greatest stakes winners conditioned by Kevin. And I'll continue this visit in just a moment, right after I remind you that if you missed any portion of this Trainer Talk show or any of our shows, all you have to do is head back to our website. That's horseracingradio.net to check out the podcast. You can do that at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Another way you can listen to the show. And you can always follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and on Instagram. Kevin, at the end of the first half of the program, we were talking about being around some tough horses and doing it from a very young age and how it's helped you now that you're training horses. I don't know if Calgary Cat was a tough horse, but he was a really, really good horse.
He was. He one of my favorite horses of all time, actually. You know, another horse, he had these exhilarating stretch runs. You know, he used to kind of follow the racer early and just kind of, the Silva used to angle him wide and he would come running. And, I mean, like I said, one of my favorite horses of all time. I would talk to that horse, like on race day, I'd remember kind of going up to his stall and I would just kind of almost have like a little pep talk with him. And I could swear that the horse understood every word I said. He was that intelligent of an animal. And, you know, he just laid it out there each and every time. Very special horse to me. Has a special place in my heart. And I will never forget that horse for the rest of my life, that's for sure.
What does a pep talk with a racehorse sound like?
You know, I would just tell him, you know, I would just kind of say, hey, bud, listen, I mean, we're out there. We've got to prove these doubters wrong. Or, you know, there's a new shooter in the race. I look tough. Just kind of things just to kind of almost like pump them up. I think it just made myself feel better. But I honestly would swear that horse could understand every word I said to him. And you know, I mean, he just, every time we put the bridle on him and let him over there, you know, he never disappointed. He I can't just say how special he was. He just, a great horse, you know what I mean, and miss him completely, like dearly. And you know, I mean, just has a special place in my heart.
Do good horses know they're good, Kevin?
I do think that horses thrive off of confidence. I'm a big believer in that. I think that when they start winning, they know that they're winning, and it just builds the momentum for them. And I think once some of those horses get on a bit of a roll, you know what I mean, they don't know where, you know what I mean, some of them are claimers, and they just kind of keep getting better and better. And they forget where they started. And, you know what I mean? I've been, I mean, fortunate enough to kind of, I mean, claim some horses and turn them into graded stake winners. And all those horses had one common thing in the fact that they got on rolls and they got good and they got their confidence. And when they got their confidence, it just kept getting better and better.
Well, your father obviously knew you were going to be successful at this sport early in life. He could see it in you when you were, we talked about Fozzie Bear in the first half of the program, but it was years later when you were around 24 years old that you were working with your dad and a horse by the name of Undue Influence. You had a bit of an incident there that really not only almost ended your career, but almost ended your life. Tell me about that episode in your training progression.
Yeah, it was early in the morning one day, and I walked. He was a real tough horse. They trained, galloped real tough. So we used to just kind of give him a little bit of crank to take the edge off of him. And I remember one day I walked into his stall to administer the crank in his mouth, and he just turned around abruptly and double-barreled and kind of connected with my face and just kind of knocked me to the ground. They rushed me to the hospital. I broke my, the one side of my face was basically fractured from my orbital bone across to the top of my gums. So it was definitely a scary moment. I was fortunate enough, obviously, to make it through, and the doctors told me I was very lucky that I got kicked where I did. It probably saved my life. It kind of, sometimes you get, I guess, a little comfortable with the horses and you forget that they are animals and they do react quickly. So I may have left, let my guard down a little bit. And when you work with them every day, you forget that sometimes. And I guess it was a good reminder, that they can do anything at any time.
Yeah, you didn't waste any time. You recuperated for the next several months, but you quickly returned to the stable. Was there a point, Kevin, as you were recuperating and trying to get healthy again, that you said, boy, do I really want to do this? Do I want to keep putting myself at risk like this? Or was it always, hey, I'm all in, I'm going to get back?
Yeah, no, I never doubted myself at that point, to be honest. I was just looking forward to coming back as soon as I could, I was eager to get back there. I just had to kind of rehabilitate first, and my mouth was kind of wired shut for a bit, so everything was kind of eating foods out of a straw, and it got to the point where I got just so frustrated I couldn't eat a steak or anything like that. And once I was able to start eating and have my strength back, and I was good enough to get back to the track. That's where I wanted to be.
Yeah, pretty special story. Kevin Attard here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Okay, so tell me about your first job on your own after you left your dad.
So, yeah, I was assistant for my dad, and then one day I received a call from Frank Stronach. My dad was training for him at the time, and he had asked me to... I would be interested in going to his farm here in Aurora, Dena Springs North, and look after the two-year-olds. Danny Vella was in charge at the time, and so obviously that was a big opportunity. I jumped at it, went to the farm, and then that was probably late summer, and then the following year they asked me to go to Fort Erie with a string of horses, and I was a little hesitant because, I mean, Fort Erie, although it being a beautiful place, it is a B track, and I didn't want to be labeled as a B trainer. And I just kind of thought, Woodbine's where I wanted to be. But I decided to give it a go, and we went to Fort Erie that year, and we were pretty successful. We won a lot of races. We did really well. And then the following year after that, I just kind of, I missed home, obviously. I was engaged, got getting married actually that year as well. So, it was time for me to kind of really start my own life and my own family. So, I came back to Woodbine. I didn't have many horses, and I struggled. I struggled a lot, and it got to the point where, that's probably the first time I doubted if I wanted to continue training, because it was a big struggle. I had a young child and a mortgage for the first time. And if it wasn't for my wife having her a job, I mean, the mortgage wouldn't have been be able to get paid. You know, I mean, I was working and it was costing me money to come to work. So, but I mean, she stuck through it. She stuck with me, and we stuck at training. And the opportunity came along one day where it got to the point where I actually sent out resumes for the first time in my life, and I just sent a bunch out and to just different places because, like I said, you know, I mean, I had bills to pay and a child to feed now. So reality sets in, and the racetrack wasn't cutting it at that time, and I just couldn't do it no more. So I had to bite the bullet, and as much as I love being a trainer and being at the racetrack and in that kind of environment, I had to swallow my pride and say, you know, maybe the dream is over. So I sent out a bunch of resumes, and it was late in the season, or, you know, Woodbine was kind of wrapping up at the time anyways, and my Uncle Larry gave me a call and said to me that Knob Hill Farms is looking for a private trainer. And he said, would you be interested? And I said, sure. I said, you know, Knob Hill's been very successful in Canadian racing. I mean, they've won some great races. And they, at the time, they weren't the Knob Hill Farm that they were in the past. But, you know, there was a lot of brand recognition with that name, right? So I met my uncle, set up an appointment for me to meet Steve Stavro. And I met him shortly after, and we discussed, and we had a conversation, and he basically hired me on the spot and asked me to go to Ford at Payson Park that winter with a string of horses. And he said that you know, I mean, he wanted to bring Knob Hill Farm back to what it used to be. And I was really excited for the opportunity, and it was just like almost a fresh new start for me.
You mentioned sending out resumes, and I talked earlier about your accounting degree that you received from, is it Humber College? Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. And when you were sending out those resumes, do you ever think about where you might be today if maybe the right opportunity came along and somebody responded and offered you a job and you took it?
Yeah, sometimes I think, you know what I mean, like where would have ended up. But, you know what I mean, it's hard. Even when you do a resume, you know what I mean, every job experience I had was at the racetrack, right? So it's not like I had a resume that was really appealing to anybody. You know, I did have a diploma in accounting, but at the same token, I mean, I went from college right to the racetrack. So, you know, I mean, there's no previous work experience other than, you know what I mean, me being a groom or an exercise rider in the past and then a trainer. So, you know what I mean, it's not, it's not something maybe a lot of people are familiar with. And then B, there, you know what I mean, the jobs that you're looking for, you've had not no work experience in them. So it's not like even when I sent out my resumes that the phone was ringing off the hook for me to get interviews. But, you know, I mean, sometimes I used to wonder, and the biggest thing I came up with is that, I mean, I could have seen myself maybe being in a bank and working as a bank. I like numbers, and I obviously like money, so that's probably the place where I probably, you know, I mean, could have seen myself maybe gravitating towards, and hopefully, I mean, if obviously the racetrack didn't turn out, maybe being happiest at most.
When you think, Kevin, about those early years and the struggles that you went through and you know, nearly leaving the game, and now last night to have your name called as the trainer of a Canadian Horse of the Year, when you reflect on all of that and everything that you've been through in this career of yours and where you are today, what things come to mind?
You know, I'm definitely very proud of what I've accomplished and where I've come. You know, it's, I've, you know, I mean, up until, you know, I mean, most recent, I mean, the horses that I've dealt with in the past have all been basically claimers or, you know, I mean, local homebreds. The stable now is getting recognition, and we're obviously getting higher caliber bred horses or higher purchased horses from sales and whatnot. So, but, you know, I mean, yesterday when I heard her, it just, you know, I mean, I honestly got emotional. I was ecstatic to be able to share that with my son because he has such a passion for the game. I mean, I look at him and I almost see myself when I was a kid and how much I loved it. And I mean, so I see a little bit of myself in him, and I can imagine kind of my father looking at me when I was a kid and seeing the same stuff. Just I think he's going to be just that much more smarter than myself or my father, to be honest with you. He seems like he has a real knack for horses and pedigrees and memory. It's obviously it was a real special moment, and it just kind of you remember all the struggles and the hard times and the late nights and whatnot that all trainers go through at some point, and just to see it all kind of come together and pay off, it's definitely self-rewarding in that sense.
Does your son want to follow in your footsteps and be a trainer?
He hasn't really kind of admitted to it outright to me or his mom, but I definitely see it happening. He just, like right now with COVID-19 and the no spectators, kind of when racing resumes, he's not sure what to do, right? Because that's where he likes to spend his days, watching races, watching horses. Prior to the Sovereign Awards, on Tuesday night, Monday night, I walk up to go to bed, and he's in his room, and he's watching replays of some of the horses, Malfi Coast and Starship Jubilee, Special Forces, the guys that were nominated, and he kind of, rewatching replays of their races last year. And I look at that, and even when I was a kid, I don't remember being kind of that into it at that time, right? So I definitely could see him, trying to come and doing the same thing, but, it almost sounds like a broken record. I can hear my mom and dad in the back of my ear kind of saying, you got to finish school, and that's exactly what I say to him now, right? School's most important. Get a degree. Try to, just know that there's a different life out there. Maybe a Monday to Friday job where weekends are to yourself, and not a 7 days a week, and kind of you almost have two homes when you're a trainer. You've got your family at home, and then you've got your racetrack family where you spend a lot of time with the people that work with you. Because at the end of the day, I'm not where I am today without the people that work for me. I've got an assistant trainer that works extremely hard. His name is Denton Ebanks. He puts a lot of time, a lot of work into it, and he strives to do to be successful. And he's a big part of my operation. I honestly couldn't do it without him. And then there's the grooms and exercise riders, and we have a staff of guys that have been with me for probably 10 years. Some of them, they're the backbone of it all, right? So there's a lot of people that kind of come into play when you're a trainer, and it's they don't get the recognition they deserve, but without them I wouldn't be where I am. And I just want my son to know that the days of having a horse of the year or winning great stake races, that doesn't happen every day, and there are a lot harder times we had to go through to get to where we are today.
Yeah, they say this is a game with the highest highs and the lowest lows. And then the other expression is that if you're going to be involved in horse racing, you better have your big boy pants on, because there are going to be plenty of times that you are going to struggle and you're going to have to fight through adversity. You've obviously done that, Kevin, and now you're at the top of the game having trained a Canadian Horse of the Year. And I can't say that enough, because I'm so happy for you. I think that's so cool.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, especially after hearing your story and the struggles and everything that you have been through. There have been plenty of high times, too, and plenty of good times. Let's go back to your very first win, which came in 2001 with Jade Eyed, who won a $42,000 maiden claiming race at Woodbine. What do you remember about that day?
Yeah, so obviously first win, really exciting. We had run a few horses before her, if I had to pick one out at the time that was going to win first, it wasn't going to be her. She was a filly that just kind of was average in the morning, And, I mean, there were a lot more that kind of showed a lot more talent, or at least you thought, prior to her winning. But Jerry Ogan rode her first time out, and she won. She was, I can't remember the price exactly, but she was a big payoff. Her odds, she was kind of not respected by the betting public, and rightfully so, because she hadn't really showed that much. But she was just the horse that in the afternoon was a complete different animal. So it was obviously, you always want to get that monkey off your back early and show people what you can do. So it was really exciting. And obviously a name I'll never forget either. Her being my first win and eventually actually my first stake win as well.
Yeah, and you didn't have to wait long after Jade Eyed won that first stakes race to get your first graded stakes win. Tell me about that day.
Yeah, El Soprano, I think that was. Is that correct?
Yep.
Summer
yep.
Stakes. Like a thrilling race. Like Gary Stevens. We were a late entry and we were looking, we were looking for a rider and it was a big... It's a big day at Woodbine that day. They've got a bunch of stakes. They have the, Woodbine Mile the same day. So we had this colt, El Soprano, and I remember watching that race like it was yesterday. He got into a world of trouble and was able to overcome and had this explosive stretch running and won that race, and it was great. I'll never forget kind of Gary Stevens looked down at me, and it's my first year training. It's Gary Stevens. Like it's almost like you're in awe. It's like an out of body experience. I had so much respect for Gary Stevens, and here he is on one of my horses. It's just like such a proud moment. And he looked down on me, and he said to me, "He said, kid, you're going to have fun with this horse." So it was a great. A great thrill, another horse that obviously has a special place in my heart.
Outside of those horses, Kevin, and Calvary Cat, who we already talked about, and Starship Jubilee, when you think back on some of the other horses, some of the other moments that have really stood out to you in your career, what are those moments?
Yeah, I had a little filly. Her name is Megan's Appeal. She was owned in partnership by my uncle from my mom's side of the family, who's been a big supporter of racing, and he's also been a big supporter of myself, Joe Chirkop. So we bought her out of the Adina sale in Ocala when they used to have their own little sale. And we didn't pay a lot of money for her, but she won the Shady Well at Woodbine, and I was really happy for that win because it was a good experience for my uncle. I believe his first stake win in his life as an owner. And like I said, he's been a big supporter of myself. When I kind of went out on my own for the first time publicly, he supported me. And he went out and he had put a few people together to buy some horses to try to get me a good start in horse racing, right? Like, that was definitely another horse and just a special moment just because of the connections involved. I owe a lot of appreciation to him. I trained a horse also by the name of Melmish. One of the most consistent horses you might come across. Another kind of claim for $20,000 that, he became a multiple graded stake winner. He's also a special horse, Pumpkin Rumble, owned by Alan Billy the Welling. They've been big supporters of me in recent years now, and they've been breeding a lot of Canadian breds and have, really invested heavily into the Canadian side of racing. They go out and, they've spent some good money and bought some younger stock horses or two-year-olds in training. That's another special horse, valedictorian winner back-to-back years. An old, classy old campaigner that's traveled across North America and run good at good races at a variety of different racetracks at a variety of distances, right? So, those kind of horses, they definitely give you fond memories that I'm sure will last a lifetime.
I'm so glad, Kevin, that you brought up some of the people that meant so much to you over the years and helped you get to where you are today, because I think there are two things when you talk about training racehorses that often get overlooked, and that's, number one, the business side of it, because let's face it, this is a business and you have to make money, and the only way you can do it is by being successful with your horses on the racetrack. But the other thing is the relationships that you develop over the years with so many amazing people. And it, this sport, the way that it brings people together, I know other sports do the same thing, but there's something unique about horse racing, isn't there?
There is. And you know, I mean, you kind of touched on it, that there are so many unique people in horse racing, and these owners are, you know, the unsung heroes, because they're the ones that are putting up the money. And you know, the horses, you know, they give us that connection between trainer and owner. And you know, when they're successful and they're winning these races, you know, just the excitement and the joy that you see from the owners that, put up the money day in and day out to care for these animals, through thick and thin. You make these relationships with them, and I've got some relationships with my owners I feel like I could call them at any time and ask them, if I was in a jam, ask them for help, or, vice versa, So, it's definitely made some long-lasting relationships that I have with people, and I've been very fortunate to have a lot of people in my corner that have supported me, and they've supported me in the tough times and stuck through with me. And now we're kind of hopefully riding the wave together in these more prosperous times.
Kevin, only a couple of minutes left. By the way, Kevin Attard, my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. What does the future hold for Kevin Attard? What goals have you set for yourself? Where do you want to be? What are the next steps, I guess?
Obviously, as I kind of mentioned earlier, getting recognized as a Sovereign Award-winning trainer is a big goal of mine. And each year we come in striving to maybe attain that goal. The Queen's Plate's high on my list. I think this year, even considering all that's gone out with COVID-19, I think it's, I have a realistic chance at being in the race with some competitive horses, and that's all you can ask for. Obviously circumstances are different this year with it being postponed, but you need good quality horses, and we've got a few of those 3-year-olds that fit that bill. With fillies and colts, actually I've got a filly that I'm really high on, and I think she could be very tough against the boys. That's another goal that we're hoping to maybe achieve this year. It'd be a real honor to win the Queen's Plate, a historic race. Growing up in Canada, it's the race that everybody kind of wants to win. So that's definitely a career goal, and hopefully something that we will be able to accomplish sooner than later. And just year in and year out, you just want to improve. Just do a little bit better than the previous year, and just see the stock continue to improve in the barn, and just having better younger horses come in and trying to develop them into great horses.
Well, Kevin, if anybody can do it and improve on 2019, which is going to be a tall order, I know you can. And really appreciate
Thank
the
you.
Visit here on Trainer Talk tonight. Thank you for taking the time, and congrats and all the best moving forward.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
All right, Kevin Attard, ladies and gentlemen. If you missed any portion of the show, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, for the podcast. For my producer, Lee Delapina, and for special guest Kevin Attard, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.